I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I'm here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering up a safe space to the independent freethinkers out there. Next hour, because it's Thursday, we will have Americans for Prosperity in with us to tell us, give us an update on what's going on in the state legislature. Here, Forrest Thigpen, the executive director over there, will be with us. He has been busy down on the Capitol grounds pushing for issues of economic freedom for Mississippi, trying valiant efforts to pull us off the bottom of the rungs. Economically here in the United States, so I'm always interested to have them in. This great organization. People need to go to their Facebook page, Americans for Prosperity Mississippi. You can follow them, see what they're up to, sign up for their text alerts on different bills that are coming that have things to do with economics in Mississippi. And as we keep saying, we better start shoring up Mississippi. I do not have a whole lot of faith that the federal government as it stands is going to be the sugar daddy we want it to be for all of time. It could be quite soon. We got problems. We got some financial news today, so we'll get to that as well. This is your last chance to tune off this show before I get started. I'll explain to you. I cannot guarantee that you will not be raided by Homeland Security in a pre-dawn raid. If you listen to this show, heaven forbid, download the podcast. Because apparently this is some level of a domestic terrorist broadcast, and I want to go ahead and I care about my listeners. I don't want you to get ensnared in this. And the reason I bring this up, I don't know if you saw this. On Tuesday, the Biden administration released a National Terrorism Advisory System Bulletin. This is from the Department of Homeland Security. Well, here's the first sentence of this thing that went out. Summary of the terrorism threat to the United States, colon. The United States remains in a heightened threat environment fueled by several factors, including an online environment filled with false or misleading narratives and conspiracy theories. So far, so good. I mean, I guess the powers that be might accuse me of some level of misleading narratives or conspiracy theories. I've explained to you I'm only a coincidence theorist. But here's the bulletin's next sentence. These threat actors seek to exacerbate societal friction, to sow discord, and here's where I start to get into trouble, and I'm going to go ahead and confess to it now, and undermine public trust in government institutions to encourage unrest, which would potentially inspire acts of violence. It is that undermine public trust in government institutions. Now, to be fair, I gave it a quick brainstorm, took me about 30 to 40 seconds to just try to figure out exactly how guilty of this crime I may be. I have only tried to undermine public trust in the following government institutions, and this may not be a totally inclusive list. I didn't spend a lot of time on it, but I've tried to undermine public trust in the CDC, the NIH, the FDA, the FBI, the CIA, the SEC, the Fed, the EPA, the USDA, the IRS, the Fed, DOD, TSA, HHS, DHS, DOJ, the DEA, the IRS, the Department of Education, the SSI, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, IRS, and the Fed. You may have noticed one that appeared quite often in that list, and I'll explain that again in just a second. But so I'm just letting you know, according to the latest the latest terrorism threat memo to the Department of Homeland Security. I so wish there had been a group of Americans who had warned the country about the formation of the Department of Homeland Security and all of the new powers that went along with that. If only a group of people had been screaming from the rooftops, don't do this, regardless of what you think took place on September 11th. This is a move towards fascism and totalitarianism. If only there had been a group of people prescient enough to see the dangers in unleashing this war on terror. Oh, right, there was a group of people doing that. It was the libertarians out there warning you of exactly what's happening here. You have a government now referring to people like myself as threat actors, seeking to exacerbate societal friction to sow discord and undermine public trust in government institutions. Now, the ugly little truth about that is that it is the government institutions themselves that have undermined all faith in them. I was listening last night to Dennis Prager. He's on WYAB starting, I believe, at 10 o'clock, and I was on the roads, and so I was listening to Dennis Prager. It was almost funny to listen to him. He said, over the last 2 years, my faith in the CDC has just been completely eroded. 2 years? 2 years? How has anybody watched the health outcomes of the United States and still had faith in your federal institutions that have anything to do with your health? This is the same as looking at any government institution that has been fighting the now 60-year war on poverty. We're $30 trillion in debt and we haven't figured out poverty yet. I don't know exactly what Dennis Prager was clinging to. Now, he did admit he's got a brother who's a doctor, so a lot of us try to, you know, we want to make nicey-nice at the Thanksgiving dinner, so I guess he didn't dare challenge the medical establishment in this country until the last 2 years. Now, I woke up to the medical establishment, the CDC, the FDA, the NIH, all of these, the USDA, about 16, 17 years ago when I realized the garbage that they were allowing people to shove into their mouths. Now, I'm not calling for a ban on anything. You've got freedom. You deserve to make your own decisions. But it's funny to me that it took what's happened over the last 2 years for them to start questioning the CDC. And as the CDC, I've explained to you, is something nothing more than a vaccine sales organization. It has nothing to do with controlling disease. Look at any chart of disease in the United States, and what you will see is accelerating rates of anyone, disease. Now, a lot of people will look at what I'm talking about now, and you'll also be outraged at the idea, particularly because they're coming after conservatives, they're coming after January 6th protesters, they're throwing the book at them. And you say to yourself, it's that Biden administration, see? It's that Biden administration. Well, I will remind you that, first of all, it was W. Bush who fear-mongered to you about terrorism to set up Homeland Security in the first place and give you all of these terrorism designations, that if only there had been a group of people, if only there had been a group of people out there shouting into the wind saying, don't let them have this amorphous terrorist designation that they can label anybody with and strip them of all of their constitutional rights. Don't let that happen. And conservatives went, well, we think that this is just about the Muslims. W loves us. He's America first. But this is not just the Biden administration. I want to remind you, I mean, there are certainly a lot of people who lived in a big building in Waco, Texas during the Clinton administration that will tell you it's not just the Biden administration doing it. And so I know the knee-jerk reaction to that is, see, Mike, it's just the Democrats. As I say, don't forget it was George W. Bush who set up this whole terrorist network that they always knew could be used, just as I call it, a turnkey tyranny used against the American citizen, particularly you conservatives out there. And even recently, in 2017, CIA Director Mike Pompeo publicly called WikiLeaks a, quote, non-state hostile intelligence service. Mike Pompeo is one of them. But he was loyal to Trump, so you believe that he's the good guy. So anyway, this is where we are right now. You are actually considered in this country by the Department of Homeland Security as a threat actor if you seek to undermine public trust in government institutions. Well, I've given you my laundry list of government institutions that I have publicly tried to undermine the faith in, because it is ill-placed faith and trust. So I guess that has been an opening segment that could be used as a confession at some point, as I am tried for being a threat actor. So listen to the rest of the show at your own risk, because I'm going after one of these institutions as soon as I get back. Stay with me. So this morning we got a little bit of news about how you're doing. The inflation numbers came in. Latest inflation numbers popped up at 7.5%, according to official numbers, which we all know are manipulated in all kinds of ways. Let me just tell you this. It's bad when they have to admit to 7.5%. I'll wait for John Williams. He's an economist and he runs a website called Shadow Stats. And I'll wait for him to give us the real number. What John Williams does is he applies the metrics from the 1980s. See, they talk about the fact that this inflation is the worst since the 1980s, and 99.9% of Americans, except maybe for regular listeners to the show, have no idea that the way they calculate these numbers in 1980 are drastically different than the way they calculate them now. So you can't even compare these numbers to the 1980s. If you would, you will find that we are significantly higher in inflation than we were in the early 80s. So I'll wait for John Williams at Shadow Stats to give us what the real number is. It'll be somewhere around 14-15%. And the interesting thing is that the Federal Reserve is still printing money. They say they'll stop soon. What the Federal Reserve told you last year is that this inflation is transitory. It's just a one-off, just a little pop. Everything will be back to normal very soon. Don't worry about it. And then they said this. They said, if it persists, we have the tools to get it back under control. I don't know if they've noticed, it's persisting. And they have not exercised one of their tools. They're actually still printing money right now. Now, Republicans and clueless conservatives will continue to blame Joe Biden himself, particularly, because it's nice and it's simple. It makes you popular with the tribe. It's a funny joking point at the Rotary Club. When the Fed and the government spenders will escape the blame, so you will allow them to keep leading us to insolvency. This is really a bee in my bonnet, as they say, to listen to conservatives and to see the stickers where Joe Biden points to the gas figure, because it just means that the Fed, the Federal Reserve that is causing all this money printing in the first place, will escape all blame, the same way that Jimmy Carter was blamed for the 1970s inflation, and nobody really paid attention to that little thing about Richard Nixon taking us off the gold standard. Never forget. Or I guess a better way to say it is, if people would ever learn this, you know, you have to know something before you can even be challenged to remember or forget it. But this is something I will never forget. This is 60 Minutes. This is the head of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell.
Fair to say you simply flooded the system with money.
Yes, we did. That's another way to think about it. We did.
Where does it come from? Do you just print it?
We print it digitally. So we, you know, we as a central bank, we have the ability to create money digitally, and we do that by buying treasury bills or bonds or other government guaranteed securities, and that actually increases the money supply. We also print actual currency, and we distribute that through the Federal Reserve banks.
Yeah. So there you go. That is actually a confession right there. That's a confession. That's the man, and he's in a long list of men and gnomes. If you ever saw Janet Yellen, she looks like a garden gnome. That is a confession of a long list of men who have put you in this spot that you're in right now. The 10-year bond is going towards around 2%. It's actually a pretty earth-shaking move. Nobody talks about the bond market, Mike. Talk about the stock market. The bond market is multiple times larger than the U.S. stock market, and bond prices are heading up, which means mortgage rates are heading up. Borrowing costs for you are going to head up, along with prices. This is setting up very nicely. That's a confession. That is a confession to creating the inflation that we see right now from Jerome Powell. It is, if people ever understood these things, it's essentially Anthony Fauci going on to 60 Minutes and saying, yes, we were experimenting with a virus and we gave it gain of function. We threw a little HIV on something. We made it transmissible among humans, and then we let it escape the Wuhan lab. That's the confession that you just heard from the Federal Reserve. And it really goes by without a peep. I'm sure the 60 Minutes is on Sunday nights at 6 o'clock. I think there's sports ball that competes with it, so Americans don't really pay attention to what he says or don't understand it. Now, that's about as simple as it gets right there. He says, we flooded the system with money. No, we print money all the time. We print it digitally. We print cash. We just send a whole bunch of money out there. And it is so sad that the economically illiterate Americans blame one certain politician because that makes them believe that they can somehow push a button real hard in November every couple of years and fix the whole situation. It's never going to happen. Sven Hendrick, the Northman trader, had a good quote of the day today, and I got another one in a second. There are some positive trends. I'm going to get to some positive trends in a second. Sven Hendrick said, sending the assets of the rich to the moon, showering the poor and middle class with 7.5% inflation and negative wage growth. We are the U.S. Federal Reserve, and we're here to help. Negative wage growth. Are you familiar with this term? Do people understand what real rates are, what real wage growth is? Because you'll see right now, Joe Biden's administration, Donald Trump's administration did the same thing. We're talking about real wage growth now. This is a byproduct not of increasing quality of living, increasing living standards, increasing earning ability of American workers. It's an inflationary process where wages track up, not enough to actually cover the cost of inflation, but just enough to make your checks a little bit bigger so maybe you don't notice so much. But when wages go up by 4% and inflation is at 7.5%, my quick public school math tells me you're losing 3.5% of your real income each year. You can have a savings account right now with a 1% yield on it. That's the yield that they'll advertise on it. But what the real yield on it is, if we've got 7.5% inflation rate and you put your money into a bank and get 1% of that money you actually earned, anyone? Negative 6.5% on that money. You lost 6.5% of your money. And you've got a guy who will go on 60 Minutes in front of the nation and tell you, yeah, we did that to you. As I said, most Americans were watching sports ball while that was going on, but it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter how many times I play this. Most people, this is too complex for them. It's a dry subject. Who wants to talk about the Federal Reserve? I do. It's the Death Star. It is absolutely amazing. The crime against humanity that we've seen when it comes to COVID restrictions, COVID lockdowns. By the way, I'm going to get to some of that in just a second. Have I missed any press conferences from Thomas Dobbs or Tate Reeves that has explained their sincerest apologies to all the business owners that they shut down and then restricted to 25% or 40% or 50% and then back down to 25%? Has Lumumba and Jackson apologized to anybody for the endless mask mandates and for masking your children now that the CDC and everybody has come out and admitted that those things are nothing but facial decorations? I just don't watch enough news to catch some of these apologies. They've got to be out there because it would really be the sign of a sociopath to put people through what they've been through over the last 2 years and not come out and apologize for it when they find out that it was horribly wrong. So I'm just assuming that apology videos or apology messages, apology addresses, apology letters have been sent out to the citizens of Jackson and the state of Mississippi. I'm sure Thomas Dobbs has come out and done a mea culpa and offered to step down because he was so derelict in his duty. If anybody runs across that, if you would, please forward it to me. This kind of light bulb is going off around the world, and when I come back, we'll talk about that. I've got a great quote of the day. It's from 130 doctors in the U.K., And we've had some great doctors standing up against the COVID regime for a while. When I first saw this, I was just thinking to myself, holy cow, we got truckers that are fighting for freedom in Canada. We got doctors that are fighting for freedom in the UK, and the US is just so far behind the curve. But I think that's a little disingenuous. We have had a lot of doctors here in the United States that have been standing up against this as well. We just kind of forget about it because they're censored and marginalized and set off to the side. And the vast, vast, vast majority of the medical establishment has sat by and allowed what has taken place to take place with very little pushback against it. But at least the UK is starting to find its footing again. They've removed their restrictions. But the 130 UK doctors have written a letter, and they get my quote of the day today when we come back. Stay with me. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I skipped over one of my, to kind of finish up my banking segment to just further undermine, what is the term that the Department of Homeland Security has referred to? Undermine public trust in government institutions. Now, the Federal Reserve is one of these quasi-government institutions. It's a bunch of private banks that control the money supply. What could possibly go wrong? And they kick back the pretty good-sized VIG to the federal government after they've taken what they want to take out of it. But I had forgotten one of my quotes of the day today. This is from New York City Mayor John F. Hyland in 1922. It's amazing how long this has been going on. So the Fed was created in 1913, tail end of 1913. So it had been around for about 8 years when he makes this comment. 8 years in. We should have known what was going on. We're 108 years later. So 100 years since this New York City mayor, and understand even at that time, New York was basically the financial hub of the entire world, developing into the Wall Street that it is today. And the New York City mayor, John F. Hyland, said this in 1922. He said, "The real menace of our republic is this invisible government, which like a giant octopus sprawls its slimy length over city, state, and nation. Like the octopus of real life, it operates under cover of self-created screen. At the head of this octopus are the Rockefeller Standard Oil Interest and a small group of powerful banking houses generally referred to as international bankers. This little cadre of powerful international bankers virtually run the United States government for their own selfish purposes." Now pay attention to New York City Mayor John F. Hyland's final statement here. He says, "They practically control both political parties. Voting a little harder next time for one of the two big major parties. Not going to fix anything for you." I did want to congratulate, in honor of Black History Month, which we're in, I wanted to congratulate the Black community. You have actually had somebody within your community finally break the glass ceiling and has found themselves at the very top of the world's largest criminal corporation. First Black woman Fed president named in Boston. The Boston Fed announced this morning that Susan Collins, a University of Michigan economist, will be the new president, replacing Eric Rosengren, who stepped down last year among a trading scandal. Collins is the first Black woman to lead one of the U.S. Central Bank's 12 districts. She'll start her post on July 1st. So July 1st, the Black community will have realized one of theirs has finally risen to the ranks to join the largest criminal organization in the history of the world. I was impressed back in the day, back in the 1990s, with the operation that Freeway Ricky Ross ran, if you're familiar with this. This is in the opening of the crack cocaine epidemic, and Freeway Ricky Ross was pretty much given carte blanche by the CIA, who ran a bunch of these drugs into the United States and sent them out to the Black communities around the country. You know, they had a revolution to fund, after all. They needed the cash. Sorry about that, inner-city Black communities that were ravaged by the crack epidemic and the violence of the 1990s and late 80s. And yes, I know Joe Biden is sending out crack pipes to people. I know that's a fun little one to talk about. It's you got to, I mean, in Biden's defense, people have never needed to smoke crack more than they have during his administration. So really, you know, I mean, he's just trying to help people escape the reality that is Joe Biden's America. But anyway, so I was impressed with Freeway Ricky Ross. If you ever seen a documentary on this, it's pretty amazing. I mean, this guy, he's cleaned himself up. He goes out and he talks anti-gang stuff. And he ran a criminal operation around this country distributing this. I'm trying to figure out how to really accurately describe this. Let me just say the CIA, the DEA, they pretty much just said, let's let this stuff flow into the United States. This guy in L.A. seems to be doing a great job getting it all over the country. And it's just making billions and billions of dollars. I can't remember. Freeway Ricky Ross was making, I want to say it was something like $25 million a day. That is not an accurate figure, but it's a stunning statistic like that. The billions of dollars that were being made in the crack cocaine and cocaine markets back in the late 80s, early 90s. It was really impressive. But now you got a black woman running the Fed. So Freeway Ricky Ross, you've got a back seat now to our first black female Fed president. Here's another quote of the day. As we're seeing restrictions rolled back around the world, there's a letter signed by 130 United Kingdom medical professionals, and I'm just going to read a little bit of it. It's actually a pretty good paper to read. You can probably take a look at it, but it's nice. I got to tell you, it's nice to see some people in the white lab coats call a spade a spade. They wrote, as part of their letter, they wrote, quote, the UK's approach to COVID has palpably failed. In the apparent desire to protect one vulnerable group, the elderly, the implemented policies have caused widespread collateral and disproportionate harm to many other vulnerable groups, especially children. Quote, repeated testing of children to find asymptomatic cases who are unlikely to spread the virus and treating them like some sort of biohazard is harmful, serves no public health purpose, and must stop. You hear that, Chokwe? Are the Jackson Public Schools actually still in a mask mandate? I do not know. I just almost assume that they may be one of the last institutions, judging by the people I see out in public, still masking their children at the grocery stores. I just assume that they actually still have that in place there. But people are standing up. Obviously, we've pointed a lot to the truckers in Canada, and that battle is, as we say, it's getting real. Now there's news of thousands of truckers here in the United States heading to Washington, D.C. I would say any trucker within the sound of my voice in Mississippi, we've got a building you can go to make your dissatisfaction. Although, we'll have to admit, the mandates have been less down here than they have been up in Canada. But anyway, they're finally lessening their grief. There are several headlines here in one of my stacks that I do. These are coming. Abrupt end to mask mandates reflects shifting. Now, you would think it would say science. Shifting data. Obviously, they have a basis for having put the mask on us in the first place and for now removing the mask, correctly? Correct? No, it says abrupt end to mask mandates reflects shifting political landscape. Essentially what that means, and again, I find it hard to find evidence of this here in Mississippi when I go to the grocery store, but public sentiment has turned against these masks. They have basically come out and slapped the American people across the face and said, take that thing off your face, dummy. It's not doing any good. And more people are coming to that realization. But for political landscape, now it's not popular anymore. The sheep are waking up. And so they are ending these mask mandates. No vax proof for Oscars. Isn't that interesting? So Hollywood, don't have to have vaccination proof for that. Now, a lot of Hollywood, I believe, was on the receiving end of that $3 billion slush fund that Jen Psaki announced for influencers to try to get people to take the vaccinations. Most of them probably out in Hollywood did not actually take them. Here's another headline. Restrictions, quote, will soon be thing of the past. Boy, that's a refreshing headline, isn't it? I'd say not so quick. We are always just one variant, one new disease. Once they have opened up this power, it's just like Department of Homeland Security, right? They were set up to do what? Fight radical jihadist terrorism here in the United States. And when we have none, they just keep the exact same tools and they roll it out now against the American people. Threat actors like myself who seek to undermine undermine public trust in government institutions. Here was a headline that I really, really liked, and it's, again, encouraging news. Hawaii will all caps not require tourists to be boosted. Now, I have had a pending trip to Hawaii scheduled since April. We were supposed to go in April, May, somewhere in that time frame of 2020. And since then, Hawaii lost their ever-loving minds and have imposed vaccine mandates for travelers headed that way. Mask mandates. I refuse to go to paradise and walk around in a face binky, sucking in my own bacteria and carbon dioxide, so I'm just not going to go. They're saying now they won't require tourists to be boosted. I don't know if that means they still have you still have to have the two shots, but you don't have to be boosted. So maybe Hawaii is finally releasing its grip, and maybe I'll get to spend some time out there in that once formerly great paradise of the United States. And then UK to drop isolations. And my curiosity is, as we see this loosening, you know, again, we're heading into the spring. This is when all diseases generally start to go away. But there's big concerning headlines from China supposedly is having a spike. Hong Kong's having a spike. I call it PTSD. I'm under no illusion that now that these things are going, we've had a couple of these instances where it was like we could all breathe out. Mask mandates lifted. We think something's getting better, and then we're, you know, within 6 weeks, we're right back in the soup again with the breathless hysteria across the mainstream media for the new variant. So pardon me if I do not exhale completely. But I am curious to know, I wonder if Americans would put up with this again. I guess this would put us, if we were to have another variant, another disease, that would be wave number 4. Are Americans really ready to do this? And if they just change tact, if they allow COVID to die, and what's going to be sick is they're going to credit the vaccines. You just wait. If they release these restrictions, they're not ever going to come out and say, look, we're taking all these restrictions off because we've looked at every single chart we can get our grubby little hands on, and none of these things made a lick of difference. Not vaccine passports, not vaccines themselves, not lockdowns, not masks, not one single one of these things worked. They'll never come out and say that. What they'll say is, well, you obeyed. You obeyed, and most of you went out there and got your shots. And now, because you behaved and took and participated in the grand experiment, now we can let you up. That might be how this thing actually ends. Eventually, I mean, in my estimation, they are really just taking a look at the landscape and figuring, can we get any more people to uptake this vaccine? And when they finally just say, look, we just can't, short of seriously going into people's homes, putting a knee on their neck and jamming it into their arm, I think we've sold all we can sell. Let's start transitioning into something else. These lockdown things, a lot of people are suspicious that they will start to use climate change. There may be days that you can only drive, you know, 2 or 3 days a week, and you'll be caught out on the roads. Your license tag will show that you're not allowed to drive on a we can just imagine all of the different things that can come up from this. But I'm very curious to see. I saw a poll the other day. Would you rather travel to the past or to the future? That was kind of an interesting question to me. I certainly would like to experience some times of the past. I'm drawn to medieval times. Feels kind of dark and miserable at some point, but it's kind of fascinating times. A lot of historical events I'd love to have witnessed and been around. But I got to tell you, my curiosity about the future is really endless, and I would be very curious to know, are they going to be able to transition this new control they have? Are enough people going to wake up through this process? When you stop and think about the fact that I believe, I want to say every single thing they did was wrong. That may be hyperbole. There may be something in there. Maybe something that was common sense that they threw in. They told you to wash down your groceries. Made no difference. There was no surface transmission. They told you to wear a mask. They tell you now that's just a facial decoration. Now you can wear the KN95 mask and become one of the bird people, but you do understand you have to change that every 2 hours. And nobody's doing that. They told you social distancing of 6 feet, and they put the stickers on the floors and told you it's one way only down this aisle in the grocery store. They find out it doesn't matter. 6 feet, 60 feet, it's an aerosolized virus. That doesn't matter. Then we've got lockdowns and the rest of these things. Every single thing that they suggested was wrong. And so will Americans finally come to that realization? Are enough people paying attention? Because this one, you don't even have to really watch the mainstream media. You just have to realize by looking at charts and seeing the experience of your friends and your relatives to realize that nothing that they did actually helped. Will enough people go, no, you know what? I don't think they're going to be right about climate change either. I don't think they're going to restrict my movements based on models again. This whole thing got kicked off by models from the Imperial College in London, that Neil Ferguson guy. You essentially have the same models that are dictating this rush towards climate change and the Green New Deal and the rest of these things. They're just as flawed models as the COVID models were. You got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
I am, Mike. Good morning. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
Well, I'm good. I'm just relishing the fact that I'm working today for 15% less than what I was yesterday.
Well, just you work 15% harder. Come on.
I just took
chip
a 15%
in.
Pay cut today, boys and girls. You talked about blaming Biden. Hell, we've been doing that since Nixon.
Right.
You know, I mean, we always blame the president. And when, in fact, the president is actually, and I'm no fan of Joe Biden's, of Obama's, and I'm not of Bush's, and Trump's, and any of the others, but they're really the least to blame. Congress and the Federal Reserve is the culprits.
Right. Well, you know,
we keep
the problem.
Electing Congress and sending those guys back for 20, 30, 40 years.
Where I blame the presidents is, number one, they have what is called the bully pulpit. And what it means is they could explain these things to the American people and they could jawbone it. See, Trump talked about these kinds of things during his campaign. Then when he became president, instead of using his bully pulpit to explain to the American people the con job of central banking and why this inflation was going on, he immediately tried to get the Federal Reserve to take us down into negative interest rates. I mean,
Donald Trump spent all his time arguing with the press.
Well, Donald Trump is more responsible for this inflation than Joe Biden is. Now, after 4 years of Joe Biden, actually, I think he's gone in a few months, but if Joe Biden was to do 4 years, he would be even more responsible for the inflation with his ridiculous spending plans than Donald Trump was. But Donald Trump is really largely responsible for a lot of this inflation, a lot of this money printing, a lot, historically high levels of money printing went on under the Trump administration, and he encouraged it. As a matter of fact, he demanded it when he was in office, and yet people just gloss over that. I know I'm supposed to ignore it, but it is the truth.
Well, and I agree with you. It is the truth, but it's more than Trump. It's for the last 20 years.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Since we've been borrowing and printing and borrowing and printing, and every year it just gets worse and worse. No, at no time over the last 20 years have we ever worked to reduce the debt in this country. We've only added to it. Over the last 2 or 3 years, we've really added to it. Up until then, it was just a steady debt growth. Now it's on steroids and it's going crazy. But we've been piling on the debt for the last 20 years.
Oh, much. I mean, longer
or maybe
than that.
Longer
yeah.
than that. But I mean, at least when Bush took office, it wasn't in the. We weren't talking about trillions.
No, but it's the percentage increase. I went through a whole list of all of the presidents back to Ronald Reagan, and Ronald Reagan actually had the worst increase on a percentage basis of the national debt, but it hadn't gotten up into the multiples of trillions yet. But each president, you know, raises it by, Clinton was around 30%. But again, you're right about Congress was one of the reasons that Clinton's spending was restrained. It wasn't because of Clinton. But under each president, the increases have been huge. And Donald Trump had huge increases in just 4 years. If he'd had another 4 years, they would have been substantially higher increases in spending. But this is just one of those issues. People have got to understand this, because what is going to happen is people are going to lay this at the feet of Joe Biden, and the Fed is going to go unblamed and unmolested, and they will just carry this on until they have finally imploded the U.S. dollar and people finally wake up to the fact that they ignored the root cause of this the whole way, and it is going to crush our children and our grandchildren.
Well, it may not make it that far. It's
yeah.
going to crush the people who are in their 40s and 50s and
yeah.
planning on retiring.
Yeah, you're right. But the problem is we've already had 40 or 50 years to enjoy the country that that was still paper clipped and duct taped together. Our kids aren't going to get that chance. But anyway, hey, man, I got to jump to a break. We're running a little long, but I appreciate the call. All right, we'll be right back.
At first I was afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me it wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along.
All right, next hour we'll be back with Forrest Thigpen, Americans for Prosperity. We'll get some legislative updates, see what's going on down there. You know what Americans are? Yeah, have you ever run across a trust fund screw-up? You know, these people who inherit a bunch of money. I know one who got a bunch of money, put it all up his nose, constantly went back to his family for, you know, spent money on rehabs and just all kinds of stuff. That's what the American people have become. We're trust fund screw-ups. We inherited this great country, this great industrial power coming out of World War II, and we decided to just live it up, loot the whole system. Now, I know none of us consciously did that, but we just ignored the people that were allowing us to saddle ourselves in this debt because we all got corralled in these two parties. I'm telling you, it's the biggest con job ever. And you'll notice Fox News and the Republican Party don't tell you anything about the Federal Reserve, and that's because they benefit as well. We're all going to pay the price for it. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. You joined on a good day on every Thursday from 10 to 11 o'clock. We have a representative from Americans for Prosperity come in. This is a group down there, the People's Lobbyists. Not all lobbyists are bad. Yeah, I was surprised to find that out as well. But we've got some down there with Americans for Prosperity that are down there trying to remove regulations and get things taxes reduced, all kinds of things for Mississippi economically. So today we've got on the phone with us Forrest Thigpen, the executive director. Is that the correct title for you, Forrest?
Well, I'm the interim state director.
Interim
little,
state.
A little while longer.
I got you. Yeah, I appreciate you guys really, you know, showing solidarity with businesses here and being short-staffed right now when it's really busy time. Because, you know, that's I think that's very impressive that you would voluntarily do that.
Yeah, not our choice. But yes, you're right. It's not theirs either.
Well, you feel the pain. I tell you what, the labor market stuff has just been fascinating to watch. I talk to business owners almost every day because I'm kind of out there, and that's the crowds I travel in. And it's across all industries. You know, I've talked to everybody from Nissan to many of their suppliers. I talked to a guy that owns 39 Sonic restaurants, and it's just everybody is so short-staffed. It is just running crazy trying to get everything done. And I know that's the case with y'all, too, while the legislature's in session.
Yeah, it gets kind of crazy. But, you know, that's we do what we have to do, just like we did for Capitol Day, which I appreciate your promoting and being there. And I could have been there in person.
Yeah, but it was a great event.
Well, and I hope people will keep that in mind for next year because it's so important for the legislators to hear from their constituents.
Right, absolutely. Well, can we clear one thing up? Americans for Prosperity, you guys are primarily involved in economic issues, tax issues. You try to reduce the tax burden on Mississippians. You try to free businesses of onerous regulations, those kinds of things. So I'm going to ask one personal thing. We're going to go ahead and get this out of the way, if you would, because I'm just curious as a legislative update to this. I saw that the day after that we finally got our medical marijuana law here in Mississippi. It is, Tate signed it. It kind of seemed like the 11th hour, and that became law, which is a good thing. The quality of the bill notwithstanding, but it still is a program out there for Mississippians now. But the day after, the House passed a bill to ban kratom here in Mississippi. Where does that stand now?
Well, it's it has passed the Senate at the very end at last night. It was about 6:30 or so. They passed a bill that has to do with the scheduling of drugs, and I don't know if they included kratom in that. But yeah, the House passed a bill to add kratom to the list of drugs that gets more highly regulated. I don't know that they put it. They may have put it on Schedule One.
Yes, they did.
That's
what I saw. So that's a total prohibition ban. You know, possession charge and all those things. So I mean, you know, for the entrepreneurs, the drug dealing entrepreneurs of Mississippi, this does give them another product line that they can offer to their people. I just find this absolutely insane that they continue down this road of prohibition. And kratom, you know, some people have problems with it. There's some quality issues with some of it. But just the idea that the state's going to get back into now enforcement action against somebody for another plant just really seems really bizarre a day after the medical marijuana bill particularly.
Well, and the justification was that this is being sold in convenience stores and you don't really know if it's laced or whatever. I mean, there were several different angles they came at it from. But to go from not selling it in convenience stores to total ban is a pretty big jump.
Yeah, so, okay, so the Senate passed something last night. I guess I'll do some research and try to find out if that was included in it. It was just one that I was certainly curious and aggravated by. But anyway, yeah. So let me ask you one other question, because we're talking today, all the news breaks, all the news this morning is about this new inflation number. We've got a 7.5, highest since, I believe, 1982. I would submit much longer than that, because the calculations of 1982 to 2022, they calculate it differently. So apples to apples, the inflation, if it was running the way it is now and it was calculated using the metrics they used in 1982, it would be closer to around 14% to 15%. Curiosity in that, obviously, bond rates are going to go up as inflation goes up. People demand more return for their invested dollars. So this means that, you know, the 10-year treasury has gone up to 2% from sub 1%. When these kinds of things happen, do the people in the legislature start realizing that any new debt accumulated by the state is going to carry a substantially higher interest payment going forward? Does that affect our bond offerings or the idea of spending debt money?
Well, probably not, unfortunately. But we generally don't see bond bills until late in the session. That you'll see one probably in about a week from now in the House and one in the Senate. And a lot of times what they'll do is they'll just put some random number. I've seen them before where they just put $1 just to have something in the works. And then at the very end of the session, just like they do with appropriation bills, then a few people will get together and figure out what laundry list they're going to put in the bills. And then they come out with that, and we don't know until the end of the session.
Right.
It's a horrible way to do it, but that's when we'll find out, or probably next week when they're debating it, that's probably when we'll find out what their real attitudes are going to be toward that.
What is it? I mean, I don't know if this is too general a question. Is there kind of an average? Is it in the hundreds of millions of dollars? Do we go, you know, do we borrow billions? What are the general numbers there? Because if you talk about taking interest rates, borrowing cost up by 1% or 2%, it starts to really matter when the numbers get big.
Yeah, like it, you know, the old saying, a billion here and a billion there, and soon it adds up to real money.
Right.
But yeah, our total state debt is I haven't looked at it lately, but I think it's about $4 billion. And what the legislature does each year is they have a bond bill, and it usually has stuff for the universities and a variety of projects, you know, pork barrel stuff. A lot of it is. Some of it's legitimate, but and they borrow, they generally end up around $300 or $400 million a year, because that's how much is being paid off each year. So what they say is we will pass a bond bill each year that does not increase the overall debt. Now, what that's just the borrowing part. That's just like putting it on your credit card. When it comes to actually paying it back, I think that's right now at about, total debt service is at about $400 million. And so that obviously would go up.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Does the state debt roll over quite, like, have they been refinancing the debt as interest rates have gone down over the past 40 years, so it's in more
Yes.
short-term maturities?
Yeah, it's some of it's, I think they generally do 20-year terms, but yes, they have been refinancing it down over the years.
Right.
So it should be at a fairly low rate. So as overall interest rates go up, then, yeah, that cost, that debt service every year will go up.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. You know, I saw a statistic that I was stunned by. The United States government finances, I believe the number is $90 trillion in debt a year. And what that means is, this doesn't mean we're borrowing $90 trillion, but they've got so many truly, you know, super short maturity things, whether they're, you know, monthly notes or 6-month notes or single year notes. So many of those things roll over multiple times during the year that they have to go out into the market and resell about $90 trillion worth of debt. And, you know, as interest rates are going to pop, I mean, I don't know if there's any way that they're not. They're already leading. You know, the interest rates are going up without the Federal Reserve acting. When the Federal Reserve starts to act, they're going to go up even more. And so we're going to be refinancing $90 trillion during 2022 at a substantially higher interest rate, possibly double what we had last year if rates continue to climb. So that's going to impact state budgets to have that much more dedicated in the upcoming years to debt service.
Yeah, plus the effect that it has on the economy, where you would end up having less tax revenue coming in as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's setting up to be a pretty ugly unwind. We've had a 40-year bull market in bonds that I don't think people really fully understand, and it has created what is probably a monster bubble that is not only going to affect consumers and businesses, but it could have a substantial effect on governments. You look at states like California and Illinois that have just got tens of billions of dollars in debt. I'm not sure how much COVID papered over that with all the stimulus they got in, but I'm sure they spent that like Mississippi spending theirs. And, you know, the debt service alone is going to alter government functions if we see substantial increases. So interesting stuff. Yeah. All right. Well, I tell you what, Forrest, let's take a quick break and then come back. Want to hear what bills you're tracking, what's still alive that's good and bad, and what's died that we will focus on what's died that was bad that we've avoided. So we're talking to Forrest Thigpen, Americans for Prosperity. We'll be right back.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul, you're on your own.
All right, welcome back. We are talking to Forrest Thigpen today with Americans for Prosperity to get some updates on what's going on in the legislature. So, Forrest, what's going on down there these days?
Pay raises for everybody.
Sweet.
Except the people. Yeah. It's, you know, the past teacher pay raise. Each house has passed a version of a teacher pay raise that'll raise teacher pay at least $4,000 a year. And for starting teachers, the House bill has an increase of $6,000 a year. Apparently, we're paying our teachers who have been around for a while, we're paying them pretty well compared to the Southeastern average, but the starting pay is a lot lower. So they passed, that was the first one. The bill, the first pay increase bill was for teachers. And now everybody else is on. We've got sheriffs and district attorneys and school board members and all kinds of folks. And then now the Senate has passed a bill that will give legislators a pay increase.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it amounts to, it'll end up being about $5,000 a year. So about $5,000 a year. So $20,000 over their 4-year term. They're doing it is they always say legislators only get paid $10,000 a year. And that is their salary per se. But they also, when they're out of session, they get paid $1,500 a month for what's called office expenses. So even if they, you know, don't have an office, but they can use that to travel around the district and pay for, you know, if they do letterhead anymore or whatever, they get $1,500 a month out of session. Plus they get paid $150 per day when they're in session for per diem. And if they come up to Jackson or come down to Jackson during the year, they get that same $150 plus mileage. Anyway, so all of that adds up to where generally most legislators get about $40,000 a year And so this bill that the Senate did would not increase their salary. So they still will be able to say, we're paid, our salary is $10,000 a year.
Right.
But it will apply that $1,500 office expense to the months that they are in session. So that's usually 3 months. So that's $4,500. And then when they're out of the first year of a four-year term, they're in for 4 months. So that would be a $6,000 increase for that first year of the term.
Oh, wow. Well, so, that's always bold. You know, I always kind of admire their courage to step up there and take more money from the taxpayer. But we see it. We understand how they get away with it, stuff like that. They just, put it around so they can still claim a talking point of not a salary increase, but actually still netting more money. You listed off a laundry list there of sheriffs and DAs and things like that. How many of those things are those legislated, or are those salaries that are paid by counties, or counties reimbursed by the state? Obviously it's all taxpayer money for anybody who serves in a government role, but
right.
How much of that goes on to the state budget?
It varies. Some of these that are at the local level are saying that the counties can pay up to a certain amount based on population. There are some of them that are based on other measures that I think the school board salaries are based on the student population. But the district attorneys, I'm pretty sure, are paid through the state budget. But the school board members, I'm pretty sure that's all local money, but the state legislature sets limits on those.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well,
there's just a lot of those. Mm-hmm. And then there was a bill that to limit the state superintendent of education salary. Right now she's paid $300,000 a year, and that's, if not the highest, it's one of the top five highest paid superintendents in the country. And so there was a bill to limit that salary to $250,000 and to do the same for the community college executive director and the IHL commissioner. And so the Senate passed a bill that they took out the IHL commissioner so that he wouldn't be limited to $250,000, but they left in the state superintendent of education. But it wouldn't happen immediately. It would happen starting at the end of whatever her contract is now. I don't know how long her contract is. So she would continue to get paid the $300,000 for as long as her current contract lasts. And then after that, it would be $250,000 limit.
Well, I guess that sounds, like a great offset. You're talking about raising the salaries of all teachers, basically all municipal employees, district attorneys, but we're going to cap two or three people's salaries at a couple of $100,000 less than they are now.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like a real offset to me, just doing the quick public school math that I'm equipped with.
Yeah. I think what the legislators would say is, no, we're giving the taxpayers a pay cut, too. I mean, a pay increase, too. Oh, Freudian slip there.
Yeah.
Is because we have these tax proposals. The House bill has been out there for a while. They passed it. The Senate bill, I don't think, has been introduced yet, but the chairman of the committee in the Senate that will deal with that has put out his proposal that would, so for instance, where the House bill provides a roundabout way for cutting your car tag costs in half, which is really just the property tax on your car, not the tag itself. So that would be, if you have a $300, $250 car tag, it would cut that price, that cost in half, sort of. I can tell you about that in a minute. But the Senate plan, they said, we're going to eliminate the entire state portion of your car tag cost. Well, that's about $10.
Yeah.
So, and then the Senate plan would also eliminate the 4% bracket. So that would be $200 per person. And then they have kind of a convoluted way of rebating money that sounds a lot better than it is. So it's really the Senate plan is very meek, to say the least.
Is the legislature here kind of like what we see in the federal, you know, the House in Washington, D.C. seems to be more, I guess, particularly when Republicans are running the place, which they are in Mississippi, the House always seems to be more aggressive, more, you know, I don't know what I'm trying to say, a little bit more, gosh, they're more aggressive on a lot of things, whether they're freedom issues or tax issues. And then the Senate seems to be kind of that establishment roadblock to a lot of things, where they water bills down, or they moderate any kind of tax cuts that might be called for out of a House Freedom Caucus at the national level. Is that the same here in Mississippi, where the House is trying to do more bold things, but the Senate is a more stodgy establishment institution?
It all depends on the leadership. Because when Tate Reeves was leading the Senate, he was pretty bold on school choice efforts, especially, and then the bill that phased out the 3% bracket and phased out the ridiculous franchise tax that we were one of the last states to have. He pressed for those things, and the House didn't really want to go along with either of those, but they ended up doing it.
Yeah.
So it really is just a matter of leadership, and I think the change, especially at the lieutenant governor's office, is significant. I mean, the current lieutenant governor's philosophy is much more centrist, I'll say, maybe even center left on some things.
Yeah.
Than Tate Reeves was. So it just depends on the leadership.
Now, when you talked about the Senate offering something to end the 4% bracket, are you saying that's the state income taxes, so that you basically would just have to get up to the 5% threshold and start paying 5% from there on, but no 4% bracket?
Yes. Yeah, I should have been more specific about that. Yeah. It used to be that on the first $5,000 of taxable income, you pay 3% income tax on that. And the next 5% was 4%. The next $5,000 is 4%, and then everything above that was 5%. So we've now eliminated the 3% bracket, and the Senate's talking about eliminating the 4% bracket. So that means that once you get down to taxable income after deductions and all that, that your first $10,000 of income would not be taxed. So everything above that $10,000 of taxable income would be taxed at 5%.
I got you. So that's where you get the $200 figure. So if you just don't take that 4% of your second $5,000 worth of income, that equates to $200. So that's a $200
right.
tax cut.
Exactly.
Yeah. What is the state of the Mississippi economy? Are they seeing growth? Do they monitor it kind of like we monitor GDP and put out quarterly figures? Is Mississippi growing? Is it stalling? Is it slowing down?
There is such thing as gross state product, like a gross domestic product is nationally. I don't know that I've seen that lately, but based on the tax revenue, there's at least a lot of economic activity out there. And I'm not talking about just the federal money that's coming in, although a lot of the growth in income and sales taxes and all that is certainly impacted, and a lot of it has been generated by that money that's been coming in.
Right.
Which is one of the issues with the tax cut, is because the Senate is saying we need to be conservative in how we look at this. We don't need to just cut a big chunk out, assuming that all this revenue is going to continue. And the House is saying, actually the Legislative Budget Office is saying, that they think that last year and this year we have about $1 billion surplus above what we were expecting. And they said they think that about $500 million of that is actually sustainable, that there's enough in their forecast where they think that they can that they're going to have that much money to be able to do the tax cut and the $250 million in teacher pay raise and all the other, these other spending things.
Well, I'm such an economics nerd. It's always interesting to me, even GDP. I mean, there's a lot of people out there who would say, and I kind of concur with them, that even, you know, U.S. GDP, if it, you know, the way it's calculated is, you know, increased business activity, and then theoretically they take out the inflation rate to give you a true measure of what increases you've had in economic output. The problem is if they underestimate inflation, then that number appears higher. I can already tell that gets wordy to describe over radio without writing it down. But with inflation, you know, if people are paying more for everything they're buying, that can appear to be economic activity. Do you think we're seeing that, or do you feel like Mississippi has got kind of a robust business climate right now?
Well, I mean, I think there's surely some of that in there. I don't how much of that I don't know, and I don't know that anybody has that has existed long enough for them to look at it and say, you know, this is the pattern that we can see that's attributable to inflation.
Yeah.
Yet.
Well, we're going to see this across the board. You know, we've certainly seen housing values go up. That's going to increase taxation. How often do they go out, and is that a state issue where they basically start setting the rates, or is that county by county, and they adjust them from time to time on, you know, reassessing the value of someone's house? Because I know this is it's a big money generator, I guess, at the county level. Is where those things are paid, but you know, how often is that done?
I think it's every 4 years, and I don't know if they can do it more often than that. But I think they, I think if I remember right, I think it's every 4 years that the counties can reassess property. And of course, there are people who, with the housing prices, the way they've been going up. You know, there will be people whose taxes are now going to be assessed at that higher value,
exactly,
even if their income has not gone up.
Right. Yeah, that was kind of my point, is that, you know, and that'll be another kind of pot of money that kind of appears in governments around the state, but it may not be, you know, it may not be something that continues, because housing has obviously been inflated and higher interest rates will knock that back down. So I was curious how often they did that. Anyway, yeah. I'm kind of out loud thinking. I am an economics nerd. I'm fascinated by all the levers that affect, you know, one thing affects another. We need to take a quick break. We'll come back. I'm gonna get off my questioning of you for personal purposes, and we'll get back to exactly what you're up to. We're talking to Forrest Thigpen. He's with Americans for Prosperity. They are kind of the people's lobbyists. Up at the Capitol building, trying to shepherd legislation through that will help the Mississippi citizen and our economic freedom and prosperity here, and try to stop those things that will derail it. So we'll get another legislative update when we get back.
I tear my heart open, I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much, and my scars remind me that the past is real.
All right, we are back. We're talking to Forrest Thigpen with Americans for Prosperity here on the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Forrest, I'll let you kind of take it from here. Tell us what else you're, what you guys are working on down there.
Well, I wanted to mention a couple of good things that happened in bills that were defeated on the Senate floor, and they've been held on what's called a motion to reconsider, so they actually could come back up today, but I don't think, at least this first one I'm going to tell you about. Well, there's right now, when people are arrested, their DNA is taken and it's logged into this national database. And then you have to, if they end up dropping the charges, or you plead down to a misdemeanor, or you know, you're just not convicted, then you can... Your DNA samples stay in the database unless you file a petition with a judge and say, hey, you know, get rid of my DNA. Well, the bill yesterday on the Senate floor would have extended that to nonviolent crimes, so that if you're arrested for a nonviolent crime, your DNA would be taken. Now, you can kind of understand maybe on a violent crime if there's going to be DNA left at the scene of the crime or, you know, on the person that you assaulted or whatever. But even just on that surface point, requiring DNA to be taken on it for an arrest in a nonviolent crime just doesn't make sense. But beyond that is the privacy issue.
Right.
Where you have this your DNA logged into this national database. And again, you may not be they may drop the charges. You may plead to a misdemeanor. You might not be convicted. And then you still have to go back and appeal for that to be destroyed. It's just, a bad bill. And it ended up being defeated by a vote of 20 to 30. And which is it's very unusual for bills that come to the House or Senate floor to be defeated, because the presumption is that the work has already been done and the concerns have been addressed in committee. So when it gets to the floor, it's a pretty big deal when a bill is defeated. So it was an interesting combination of folks that voted against it.
Yeah, I was about to ask that. Was that a Republican-sponsored bill when it came out because some kind of a tip to law enforcement, a law and order bill? Is that how it was sent out from the Republican Party?
It was a Republican chairman of the committee, that was responding to law enforcement requests.
Wow. Well, good.
And then another bill that was defeated was had to do with carbon dioxide being piped to by private companies carbon dioxide is used in fracking, for instance. And so the piping of that, they were going to expand the eminent domain capabilities of private companies to be able to do that. Put their pipelines, and that too was defeated.
Oh, they would grant eminent domain to private companies?
Yeah, well, even right now in the our state constitution, there's a prohibition on governments using eminent domain. This was from an initiative a few years ago says that if a government uses eminent domain, they can't then take that property that they've taken from a private individual and give it to another private person or company. Except there's an exception for utilities, and that including pipelines, even in the Constitution. So they already had some authority to do that, but this bill would have expanded that to some degree. And it's not necessarily that this bill would have been unconstitutional, but it was still a bad idea, and it was defeated. It was a little closer, so if they bring it back up, it's possible that that could pass.
Right.
But at least initially, it's good that we had senators that stood up and opposed that.
All bills by now have been introduced, right? So they're all just going through the process, but nothing new will arise. So it makes it easier for you. As some weed out, you can focus in more on what's still existing. Is that where we stand right now?
Well, to some degree. I mean, they're on February 1st, that was the first committee deadline, and if a bill had not been brought up in committee by that time, then it died. But that only applies to what are called general bills, and those are bills that create new laws or amend existing laws. But there's a different deadline, and so bills are still being introduced on bills that will take your money or spend your money or borrow money on your behalf. So bond bills, tax bills, appropriation bills, and also what they call local and private bills, which in a lot of cases are granting authority to a local government to institute or continue a tax on restaurants and hotels and that type thing.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of bills to be introduced. And in fact, in some cases, like tax bills can be introduced one morning, taken up in committee that afternoon, and taken up on the floor the next day.
Oh, wow. That makes your job fun, I'm sure.
Yeah, never can sleep.
Right.
On these.
Yeah. Exactly. Real quick, you said. What about the initiative process that was struck down by the Supreme Court? Are they taking any action on that?
Yeah, there were 8 different bills to address that. One has survived and has passed the House. But instead of restoring what was there with the ability to amend the state constitution, what passed the House is a proposal to allow the initiative process to be used only to create or amend state law.
Right.
So they wouldn't be able to put it in the Constitution. Most of the things still are intact with the number of signatures that you would have to get, obviously fixed for what the Supreme Court ruled on the proportion of how many signatures come from different congressional districts, but the total number of signatures would still be the same. What is different, one thing that is different, is that there would not be an option for a legislative alternative. So if you get enough signatures, then as long as those signatures are certified at 90 days before a general election, then it goes on the ballot.
As is. It's either up or down, right, on whatever goes through the process, as opposed to what they did with medical marijuana, and I think they did it with the full funding of education. They offer an alternative amendment that's really more confusing than anything.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And then the legislature would not, if it passes, if the initiative passes, the legislature would not be able to change it for 2 years, at least 2 years, unless they declare an emergency and say this, whatever this initiative thing is causing great problems. And then that requires 2/3 of both houses to agree that this is an emergency worthy of setting aside whatever was passed by initiative.
Right. So what do you think the chances are of restoring an initiative process by the end of this legislature? Do you think these things will this particular bill you're talking about will pass?
I think it will. I mean, it may face some changes in the Senate, but I think it will. I think there's enough sentiment among legislators that they want to restore it, but I don't think there would be enough to restore the constitutional amendment.
Yeah, and I haven't really heard many arguments against that. It's probably a little bit of an easier thing to surmount by making it a law rather than an amendment to the Constitution. I know dealing with the medical marijuana thing, that was one of the arguments that was put up was, you know, you're changing the Constitution as opposed to just, you know, passing new law. So that's probably a positive. Well, I think that's good. I mean, I think at least they're, because that is the legislature, I mean, theoretically kind of relinquishing a little bit of power and allowing the people to have a bigger voice.
Yeah, I mean, and we are a republic. We're not a direct democracy.
Right.
And so this still does allow the people, when the legislature just will not act, to put something out there. Now, this proposal will have to pass both houses. The governor does not have to sign it, but it in itself is a proposed constitutional amendment. So it will be on the ballot this fall for the voters to approve this new process.
Yeah, interesting. All right, one more quick break. We're talking to Forrest Thigpen, Americans for Prosperity. We'll wrap it up when we come back. You'll stay with us.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment. We're talking to Forrest Thigpen, Americans for Prosperity. Forrest, we've only got a couple minutes left, but tell us the last couple of things that you're keeping your eye on down there.
Well, every year there's talk about what to do with the state alcohol wholesale warehouse that's in Gluckstadt. The state is the only wholesale entity allowed for alcohol. So everything that's bought in local stores has to go through theirs. The House has a proposal to get the state out of that and let private companies do the wholesaling. The Senate has a bill that will expand the existing warehouse at Gluckstadt. And so it's two totally different approaches to try to addressing this. And that obviously we think the government ought to be out of that process anyway.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I'll mention is there is a bill the House has passed that would overrule local ordinances like they have in Jackson that make it very difficult to have a home-based business. Like in Jackson, you can't even have an employee at your house. You know, if you're a bookkeeper and you want to hire somebody to help you with that, you can't do that unless they're a relative who happens to live at that house.
Oh, wow.
There are various things like that around the state, and so this would override those, and that has passed the House, so that's a good thing.
Oh, good. Well, hopefully we'll see that go through. I as you say that out loud, I don't think I was aware of that law, and I think I violated it in the past. So anyway, I'm glad I escaped justice. All right, well, we appreciate y'all being down there fighting for us down there on the Capitol and trying to get some of the obstacles out of the way of entrepreneurs here in the state and getting some of the tax burden out off of us. Tell people how they can find you guys.
Best way is Facebook page, Americans for Prosperity Mississippi, and that's the best way to stay in touch.
Okay, I know y'all do a good job of kind of alerting people if there's something they need to take action on, and I'm sure you'll have events in the future once you get some of this behind you that people can get involved with your organization. We've been talking to Forrest Thigpen with Americans for Prosperity. Forrest, thanks so much for joining me again today.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, talk to you next time. All right, and to everybody else, have a great day. I'll see you tomorrow.
No
Bye-bye.
Matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.